Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
You like it?
I do.
I like it a lot. Fun football weekend. Especially the Raiders. If you play dogs, fun football weekend. If you play favorites, I'm sorry. It was rough. Willie Ramirez is here. Willie's going to have the full rundown and lickety-split. We got a lot to get to. Show seems real well-organized. Man, there were so many good stories this weekend. I'm actually going to go back to Friday to start, Willie, but I'll ask you first. How are you, buddy?
Doing good. Doing good.
This is a home away from home for you, maybe a home of the past, Ellis Island.
Home of the past, and let me tell you, this has turned into, it's beyond a locals joint, but it's still a locals joint because of who is sort of taking over. Our good buddy Steve's here in terms of the hosting, right?
He's kind of a host here, really. The Ellis sisters have taken over. Gary Ellis is the owner. You know, obviously, he still rules the roost here, but Christina and Anne-Marie have done an unbelievable job, and that's why you see all these build-outs like the front yard.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people locally who have not seen the front yard. It is a beer garden. It is massive. There's probably 50 tables in here. I don't know what the capacity is, so I don't want to screw them up with the fire marshal, but I don't know, whatever it was, 600-800 people here over the weekend for UFC 306. We'll get to that later on. And then inside, you can see all the improvements.
Yeah.
And they have more stuff on the way. If you look to our right through the windows facing south, there's a big structure going up that looks like it's going to be like three or four stories. So the building and improvement keeps coming here. And the old Ellis Island, which I loved, if you haven't seen the new, you're going to be blown away by it. And it's a good chance to come down and watch Monday Night Football and win a bunch of prizes.
Well, and as I was telling you before we went on the air, back in the day, when for my old school Vegas folks, if you remember the nightclub Tramps and Shark Club, Tuesdays was usually the dark night, right? In terms of, like, there wasn't a lot going on in the nightclubs. Because Monday night there was a huge talent contest up the street on Harmon at the Shark Club. So this was the spot for the locals. We would come down here, karaoke, video poker, hang out. Then about 10, 12 years later, this was a cool spot for sports bettors because you didn't have to – it was easy parking, get in and out. And I just can't remember – do you remember the books Leroy or Cal Neva?
Of course, I worked with Leroy's.
Okay, so I can't remember which one was here, but one of the two satellite was here.
99% sure it was Leroy's.
Okay, so
there you go. One of Adam's brothers worked here at Leroy's.
Gotcha.
He was a legendary
– yeah.
Ticket provider.
It was a
bet taker.
This was always a cool spot, and I love the facelift. So yeah,
dynamite. $7 bites, $7 drinks from now until 6, which is unheard of on Monday Night Football. Most people cut off their specials as Monday Night Football kicks off. For Monday and Thursday now, change with ESPN Las Vegas. The game is starting over on Raider Nation Radio, 9:20. The whole game will be over there, and sometimes we join it in progress. We'll get you an update on what's happening here on ESPN Las Vegas, but it's Willie, it's Mateo, it's Cofield. So let's kick things off by going back to the football weekend that started on Friday. Man, really good feelings right now around UNLV football, and beating Houston on the road was one thing. And by the way, Houston actually went out, and Rice isn't good, but they smashed them. So Houston's starting to kind of show signs of maybe having a decent season. Rebels took care of that game. They took care of Utah Tech, which they should have. And then, a lot like last year, Willie, first half, you're like, oh, man, this is going to be kind of difficult. They had a lot of first halves last year where things didn't look great, but as the game went along, I think their depth pays off. They make adjustments. And I got to tell you, at the end of that game, there were 21-5 in that building. That's what it holds. It's the KC Soccer Stadium. Great football venue on top of the field, on top of the Rebels. End of the game. I mean, just cleared out, absolute silence. They were shocked. I think they came into the game, the Kansas fans, especially the students, like, UNLV, easy game.
Yeah. And you know what? I did a TV hit earlier, and we're going to touch all this stuff throughout the next few hours here on Cofield and Company, but what a weekend for Las Vegas, and the fact that it was UNLV football that kicked it off. I mean, because we're going to talk about what took place in town on Mexican Independence Day, right, at the Sphere and at T-Mobile. What took place at Michelob Ultra with Asia. What took place in Baltimore with the Raiders. But that UNLV kicked off a winning weekend for Las Vegas was tremendous. And you're right, it was the resiliency, it was the diligence, and it was the deliberate nature in which UNLV football played with in the second half that really sort of set the tone for the weekend. And I think it was, I just think it was really cool and really fantastic. And then, of course, yesterday when the rankings came out, it just gets better and better for that program.
First time in school history, 56 years of football, they'd never been ranked before. So they're in the coaches' poll at number 25. And you know how you build up the local fan base with the Rebels? Because we have a lot of transplants. And you know how you build up the Raiders fan base? Because there really is not a gigantic fan base here yet because everyone else has their teams. You win. It's that simple. You have to win.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a good example. I went yesterday to a bar in the morning to watch football, which, yes, anyone who's been listening the last 6 weeks heard me say repeatedly as I bickered at home with the SO, the significant other, should I really buy a Sunday ticket? And I wound up doing it.
Oh, boy.
And I was talking to JVT on Sunday morning, and he was asking me because he was over at Westgate doing his JVT Sunday football preview show, and he's like, you're going to come down here to watch the game? And I'm like, no, I'm going to a bar. And he's like, you bought the package. What are you doing? I'm like, I know. That was the whole scenario I tried to explain, but I did it. But what I saw at the bar was a couple things. I don't know if you go out to bars very often to go watch, you know, Sunday football. Probably not. One.
I'm waiting on the invite.
Well, I think the rules are, one, you better get there early to get your game on TV. Because when they got 10 games like they did yesterday, and the place we went to had like probably 14 TVs, all different feeds. Like, a lot of places don't have that. So you better get there early to get your game on. Secondly, and I'll give you an example of that. It's 10:01. I look to my right. We're sitting at the bar. We got our games on because we got there at like 9:35. Like, dude, I'm intense.
And it's not a fan bar.
It's not a specific.
So it's specific, okay.
Nope. So, like, we were with Niners fan, Chargers fan, Jets fan, right?
Yeah.
Games are up.
Yep.
Got there at 9:35. We're ready. We're prepped. And the whole time I sat there because they hadn't switched the TVs and it was like 9:57. I'm just like, okay, am I going to have to watch this game on my phone? Like, what's going on? Yeah, right. So they nailed it. Guy walks in at 10:01, 4 minutes before kickoff, sits down at one end. All the TVs are all set. And he's like, hey, can I get the Giants game on? And I give credit to the bartender, female. She's like, like, all these people have been here. He's like, okay, I'll go sit on the side. Yeah, you're going to go sit on the side. You got to show up. Sunday morning. This is intense.
Can I interject here real quick? Yeah. By the way, Ryan Clark's suit is an 11 out of 10 on the outside of Lincoln Financial. Just noticed that. You said that at your party where you were sitting and the TV in front of you, Niners fan, Charger fan, Jets fan.
Right.
When y'all walked in there, there's no way that you thought that at 1:05 you'd be walking out and the lone disappointed fan would be the 49er fan.
You're right. And I actually said to the SO, because she's Chargers, I'm Jets, I'm like, how many Sundays have we walked out of somewhere where we went 2-0? And I said, I'll look it up. We've been together like 12 years. Even worse. Ready? How many weekends? Jets win, Chargers win, UNLV football win, and then my school, Rutgers win.
Wow.
In 12 years, it might be like one weekend. What's 12 times? Well, it's not 52. What's 12 times whatever it would be, I guess? How many weekends are we talking about over 12 years, right? We're talking about roughly whatever. We'll 72. Say an average of 16, right? So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we're looking at almost 200 weekends. Yeah. There may not be a weekend where we've gotten all four wins. And then, you know, the other question is, a guy walked in at about 10:13. I watch this stuff. Sits down at the bar and he's like, if the Raiders sound's not on? Now, that one's a little dicey. But my thought has always been, hey, if there's a player, first of all, they get the rule of the roost. If there's someone who plays those tabletop bar machines,
yes.
And whoever the most valuable person is there,
yeah.
Whoever they like the most, they're getting the sound. But no Raiders sound. Should that be a rule now in Las Vegas at every bar that has Sunday ticket that the Raiders sound should be on? I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I'm not buying into that.
The guy looked like he was a regular. Maybe he plays, but she put up the hand like I do. Hold on. Stop. Sorry.
Will you do the slow motion?
I do the slow.
Yeah.
Slow down.
Yeah.
We got a read to do. We're going to break.
Yes. you know, especially because there's so many bars that are team bars. So, like, you're not going to put the Raider sound up at our popular media watering hole on West Charleston. Not at the Dog Pound's filled in Cleveland, right? Yeah. So, I mean,
Cowboys Bar, you ain't getting it. Steelers
Cowboys Bar
on
Rainbow,
Bears
right?
Bar,
I mean, so there are places. It's just not going to happen. Now, if for whatever reason, I mean, you're not going to go around and ask everybody. I mean, I think maybe – here's the thing. If nobody's requested anything, Raiders are on, East Coast, 10 a.m. game, you got a nice-sized crowd. Nobody's requested anything. Throw it on.
That's the other thing
is that
it got caught in a net of 10 games in the morning.
Right.
In the afternoon, you're probably going to get it unless there's a player who really wants whatever afternoon game is on.
Yeah.
So what a feeling, right, after last week – and we overreact. I think our show does it less. We're stupid. We probably should be doing it and giving hot takes every week and say everyone should be fired and this team sucks. But I don't want to have to go back the next week and go, well, I guess we were wrong. People here were not feeling real good about the Raiders after game one. And it was mostly offense. It just didn't click. And I got to tell you, Willie, watching that first half, I'm like, man, how bad is this season going to be?
Yeah.
And then halftime, I mean, I think it was the second quarter we saw that Minshew interception, and Max is, like, in his face, and Minshew's like, okay, I gotcha. And I'm not saying that's the only reason it turned around, but the second half was completely different in terms of offensive efficiency.
It was not – there were two turning points for me in this game. That was one of them. The other one, which I don't know if they caught it, but I saw a story on it. Davante Adams called a sideline meeting and got in everybody's face the same way that Max did Gardner Minshew. So when you're talking about the offensive captain of this team and the defensive captain of this team, in a sense, firing things up in-game, not letting everybody, hey, you know what? Because in reality, they never get down. They're always going to put out 200%. Other people, they make a mistake, they hang their head. When you see the defensive captain going over to the offensive co-captain in Gardner Minshew, he is the quarterback, getting in his face and letting him know, hey, get off the field. Get your iPad, make the mistake, correct the mistake, get back out here. We got you. We're going to get you the ball back. That's huge. That's big time. When you have Davante Adams calling a team meeting and firing things, instead of slamming his helmet, sitting down like we saw on receiver, taking that big energy and fueling it into his teammates, firing them up, that's huge. It's big. First half, you're shaking your head. You're like, okay, what's going on? Are they going to get the running game going? Are they going to open things up? What is it going to take, you know? And I have my X factor. We're going to be talking about the Raiders throughout the game, and I'll touch on it later. But I have an X factor on this offense that I think is going to be huge down the stretch, or to start this first quarter of the season, if you will. I mentioned it on TV last week. He somewhat came up big this week. We'll talk about it.
But yeah, let's get to it. We'll get to it after the break. Remember, Ellis Island Front Yard, Monday Night Football. They've got all-you-can-drink beer specials, just $30. All-you-can-eat food specials as well. There's about 27 items on the all-you-can-eat menu. I mean, it's most of the menu here at the Front Yard, and their menu is absolutely dynamite. I told you last week, they serve so much bacon here between the pork belly, breakfast, and other items like bacon, mac, and cheese. They got their own pork plant. Like they're like, we like this bacon, this pork belly. We are locked in. We're out here for UFC 306. One of the guys with us, Kalani, our buddy from Franchise Sports Media, is like, you know what? I'll put in an order of bacon. He just got bacon. That's how good the freaking bacon is here. All the food is great here. Ellis Island on Monday. Come hang with Cofield and company. Tons of prizes to give away. Willie's here as well. On the way back, Willie's going to give you that surprise thought coming out of the game.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Front Yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
I don't care what they doubt. We believe it. You know what I'm saying? We're going to continue to get better. We got the right people to do it. Not the right players, the right people to do it. As long as we got that, we're going to be all right.
A very upbeat Gardner Minshew got beat up pretty good last week in between game one and two. And he played well in the second half. Obviously, he's throwing a lot underneath. He's completing a lot of passes. He's been accurate. I'll tell you, don't take for granted the accuracy of stuff to the running backs and especially the wide receivers on bubble screens because, one of the things I noticed yesterday, and the Jets found a way to win, Aaron Rodgers made some awesome passes downfield. He stinks right now, and I'm guessing some of it is because of not practicing. He practiced, not playing in the preseason, and when I say he stinks, he doesn't stink overall. He stinks on the short stuff. He was behind guys, low on bubble screens. And those are supposed to be like gimme. The play, The hard part of the play is getting the yardage.
Yeah.
The throw has to be on the mark, and I'll give Minshew credit for getting the job done there. And, you know, Willie, we're going to get to your secret weapon on offense here in a couple minutes, but I got to point out just how the Raiders look right now in terms of the schedule. This is such a big win because the Ravens have their back against the wall. You give them another loss. And look at the schedule, the way it's rolling out here. You got two home games coming up. Panthers now in flux. I mean, Andy Dalton is better than Bryce Young, but the rest of the Panthers, that team's not good. I obviously kept an eye on that game yesterday with the Chargers and the Panthers. Browns at home after that. Who knows what Browns – you're going to get a good defense, but
yeah,
who knows what
Deshaun –
know
the offense,
Deshaun Watson played a good half so far this season. Right. At Broncos, I mean, Bo Nix ain't in right now. I mean, I'm not giving up on him. Steelers at home. Steelers are 2-0. They've got two touchdowns and two wins. That's it, two. So who knows what they're at quarterback. By the way, at the Rams, which will be a home game, and it looks like no Puka Nacua and no Cooper Kupp. And their O-line is beat to hell, and then after that's the Chiefs. You have a chance, if you do what you're doing now on defense and get a little better on offense, to make a real run coming out of the gates.
You could go. They could go 5-0. I'll tell you what. What's good about this schedule, in my opinion, is that it's better that the Steelers are in four games than next up. Like, for instance, if the Steelers were next and the Panthers were in the – you'd be in trouble, because that defense, it, you know, the offense is still gelling. We saw what it did for the last four or five quarters, realistically. Actually, the first half was a little sketchy, but in a sense, they're building. By the time the Steelers arrive, that offense could be really good. If the running game comes around, if my X factor in the locker room does what I think.
On offense.
And it has nothing to do with in-game. It's exploiting something in the locker room.
Andre James.
No.
All right, I'm setting you up. I'm being a doofus.
Well,
you kind of gave it away. I'm a doofus every day, but okay. So who's the X-factor secret weapon?
Ameer Abdullah.
Really?
In the years past since he arrived, I've noticed his vibrancy and his energy in the locker room. And just he's just a jovial guy. He's got everybody's ear. They want so bad for Zamir White to be RB1, right? We're seeing Madison do his thing. At some point, somebody has to tell Zamir White and remind him what he did at Georgia, how he played at Georgia, how he ran at Georgia. The ferociousness, the viciousness, the overpowering nature in how he ran the ball, and to do it here with the Raiders. I just don't know if he was mentally prepared. There are times when he breaks out. Like last year when he didn't have the pressure and he'd come in for Josh Jacobs, he ran with no pressure. This year he's got the pressure. Yep. He has to run with a deliberate nature. I've been using that phrase since last week doing a TV hit for a local show here, one of the local sports shows. Deliberate nature. I know it's in him. I'm calling upon Ameer Abdullah to sort of use his leadership and go and remind that dude and get in his ear the same way that Devontae Adams did the whole unit on the sidelines, the same way Max Crosby got in Gardner Minshew's face. I think that's the guy, because they're in the running backs room together. And if he mentors him and sort of just bullies him in a positive manner, it could wake him up.
364-1100, 364-1100. Caller 7, we got Aviators against El Paso. That's going to be the final homestand coming up at the end of the week. It's starting middle of the week. But Friday, fireworks night, first pitch 7:05. You can get your tickets at aviatorslv.com. But fireworks night, we got a pair of tickets for Las Vegas baseball, AAA baseball, Aviators baseball. Caller 7, 364-1100, 364-1100.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN. Las Vegas.
How stupid is that? This is Travis Hunter. Dude, this is Travis Hunter. This is Travis Hunter. Like, who does that? I wouldn't allow my kids to do that. And y'all know that. And that ought to be said.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words saying.
Not the biggest game of the weekend in college football, but it's always entertaining before, during, and after the game with Deion Sanders in Colorado. That's Willie, Cofield, Ellis Island, front yard, getting ready for Monday Night Football. Griffin, give me the cut again so I want to hear it clearly. Give it to me again here. Now, because he low talks a little bit in there. So listen to what he's saying here, and especially at the end.
How stupid is that? This is Travis Hunter. Dude, this is Travis Hunter. This is Travis Hunter. Like, who does that? I wouldn't allow my kids to do that. And y'all know that. And that ought to be said.
I don't think Deion is working us here.
No.
I really think he's completely delusional.
Yes.
From game to game, week to week, day to day. First of all, in a game, I don't care how good a player is, and Travis Hunter is very good. Everyone needs to stop with, he's automatic for the Heisman. You're not going to get a Heisman winner from a four-win team. Okay, so let's stop that right now. He's going to have to make a real push, and they're going to have to actually win some games. He's great. He's probably a good bet for, middle of the first round, late first round in the NFL draft. But at the end, he says, I wouldn't let my kids do that. Is he watching the game? Does he pay attention during the week?
Was he at media day that I was at?
Your kids do it! Your kids do it! What do you mean I wouldn't let my kid talk trash? What he's referencing is Travis Hunter in the game, one of the defensive backs for Colorado State gave the too small, which Willie and I will go through the show. Like, throughout a show, especially when we're on the road, Griffin can't see it. But, we have good takes, and Willie gave me, the too small. He looked at me, he goes, you're too small.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, that's part of the game. Yeah. I don't care who Travis Hunter is. If I'm going to talk trash, I'm going to talk trash. But the outrageous part is, last week, Shador, before the game, check that. Shiloh, before the game, coin flip with Nebraska in his face, who kicked their ass, by the way. Shiloh's like, we're going to roll you guys. And he starts laughing, and they're like, okay. And then they got buried. Shador, after this game, walks up to Brandon Fowler Nicolosi and says, I saw what you said, and puts his finger in his face. Okay. You know what? Comeuppance. Right? I don't care about the trash talk itself. I do care about one side going, you can't trash talk us. Like, no, they can. By the way, within the game, Travis Hunter on a touchdown was trash talking. On that touchdown, Shador ran towards the CSU stands, yep. Was trash talking.
Yes.
Deion, you got to stop with the, it's disrespectful. You know, people shouldn't be talking about us between games. Like, why? Well, why wouldn't they talk about you?
And
you talk about them.
It ties right into the, his preseason mantra with the media, cutting people off because they were writing about him negatively in his eyes. I do want to address one thing with the Shador Sanders, Braden Fowler, Nicolosi exchange. I read headlines, a lot of clickbait headlines with this particular story. Now, I don't like the fact, and here's the thing. I met all three. Well, I didn't meet Deion, but we saw the exchange, you and right, at Media Day. I talked to Shador. I talked to Shiloh. I'm not going to defend their arrogance, but what I will say is this. I didn't like the headlines because they knew, based off past arrogant moments, that a headline like Shador Sanders refuses to shake hands, storms up, whatever. That I saw more headlines like that than I did the truth. And here's the truth if you watch the video. First of all, when he walked up, he did not pull his hand away purposely. It was a simultaneous move where
Braden.
He reaches out with the hand, and at the exact same time, Shador goes, I saw you. So he was actually just doing that. I don't think he meant to go in his face, Steve. He was like going, dude, I saw what you did. I saw we've all done that, like it's trash talking, whatever it may be. And it was Braden who walked off. If Braden would have been like, you right, dog. I got you. Got me. You got all right. You got like if it was one of Shador's high school buddies that was talking smack before the game on Instagram, and he did that afterwards, they would have laughed it off, dapped it up, hugged it, and said, "You got me this time. All right. You right. You right." But when he walked off, is when Shadur added one line with an F-bomb, and the other dude, and Braden goes, yeah, keep talking. So in reality, the person who should have shut his mouth was Braden, because you did lose, yep. You did talk smack, and you walked off. I actually disagreed with the headline. I disagreed with all the strife that Sanders got in this particular exchange. If you watch the video, I'm actually defending Sanders on this one.
Colorado played a good game, outgained him. I mean, Hunter was awesome. Shadur was awesome. They nutted up. They were able to stop the run. They played a lot more stout. They deserve credit. And now they're going to start going into that Big 12 schedule, and we'll see how they deliver there. But again, on the trash talk stuff, Deion's got to stop with "you can't trash talk us." Come on, bro. I don't think he sees what goes on the field.
No, and he's not exact. And he
of all guys
to
be
about seeing, like, he knows.
And he does it after the games too.
He knows. And if there's anybody that he's watching after every single play, especially touchdown, he's watching his kids.
Yeah.
Because he's waiting for them to come over so he can chest bump them, fist bump them, whatever. It's not that he doesn't know. You're not exempt from trash talking. It's part of the game. If the shoe was on the other foot, he'd be saying, and getting mad that they were trash talking him, he'd be saying, it's part of the game. That's what it is. It's in the heat of the moment. It's competition. So,
now what was interesting, and I don't even hate this move, because when you do this, you are going to get it back. So don't be a B and complain in the future if someone does this to you. But at the end of the game, there's a minute left. They're at midfield. They go for it on fourth down. They don't get it. Deion did this whole thing where he's ranting, like, oh, they're trying to score, right? They're trying to score. We're going to try to score. Dude, you know what's going on. And then I don't know. Someone must have said protocol, and he's like, I don't know what protocol is. Well, Ross Tucker was on the game. Ross called it like he saw it. He's like, this is a weird deal because Pat Shurmur, a former NFL guy, is being made to throw, you know, to put in a play on fourth and one or fourth down, whatever it was, fourth and five, with a minute left, up 28-9. Fire this.
I think this has to be coming from Deion Sanders. Because I just can't imagine that this is what Pat Shurmur would want to be doing in this situation. I mean, he's a three-time NFL head coach. I think Pat would just be taking a knee and winning the football game and not taking a chance that any offensive lineman gets hurt or that the quarterback gets hit again. Now they're going for it on fourth down.
Yep. And they didn't get it. And this is highly entertaining. I love the stuff between the game, on the field. Shadur and Hunter are awesome, but they're setting themselves up for some games just kind of like last year when Oregon smoked them and then Oregon kind of danced on their grave and they got insulted and then they pulled whatever that. By the way, we haven't heard anything about that Oregon film stealing, hacking thing. That had like a one-day shelf life, but yeah. It's going to be really interesting the rest of the season with these guys. Giveaway time. Wu-Tang Clan finishing up their residency. Show coming up next week. Theater, Virgin. All the Wu-Tang members are there, AXS.com, AXS.com. Caller 7-364-1100, 364-10. Check that, 1100, 347. I'm getting the number wrong. I'm all over the place. What am I doing here? I'm thinking about other numbers.
7-2-364-1100.
I don't know what's going on. I started to think about a different number. I know, I'm fired
come
up.
Come on, Shadur.
3-364-1100. Steve Kim is on the way on the Canelo fight. Good fight?
Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino.
It's amazing. The focus all week at practice, the emphasis on Lamar, the special player that he is. I think the plan that PG had, how our guys play so hard and execute it, it was amazing, man. They kept us in the game till the end.
Steve Kim, the host of the Three Knockdown Rule podcast, joins Cofield and Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
Back to throw. Crosby off the edge. And he's got him around the waist for a sack at the 40. Max Crosby completely beat the right tackle, Patrick McCurry, around the edge, and Crosby has his second sack of the season.
Let's bring in Steve Kim. Steve, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, good Monday to you guys.
It is a good Monday. We're not necessarily Raiders fans, but it's always fun covering a winning NFL team. And, boy, it's crazy how week to week you go up and down with the National Football League, and the Raiders kind of look like a team, good defense, and maybe Minshew can do something long term.
Well, I mean, that's interesting if Minshew really is their long-term quarterback, but I think it's a huge victory for Antonio Pierce. And look, even though it's a 17-game season, nobody wants to start off 0-2. We all know the stats about the 16-game season. If you drop your first two, your chances of becoming a playoff team will drop precipitously. And just the optics of it. I mean, look, last December. Antonio Pierce led a team into Arrowhead, beat the future and defending Super Bowl champions, and now they beat one of the AFC powerhouses. You know, even at this level, sometimes you got to convince players, even the veterans, that, hey, you can win tough games. So that I don't go out there and try to minimize that victory for Antonio Pierce or the Raider organization.
All right, Steve, let's get right into the squared circle. I was there Saturday night at T-Mobile Arena, watched Canelo Alvarez dissect Edgar Berlanga. It was one-sided. I personally, I know that the biggest decision, I think, was 118-110 or 118-109. I had a clean sweep. I didn't see anything that Berlanga did to sneak around in there, but it was definitely dominant. Your thoughts on the fight, first of all?
You know, I'm with you. You know, I was watching it along with some football games. I didn't see a round that Berlanga won, much less three. And maybe, you know, sometimes judges do that. They start grading on a curve after you bank a couple of rounds for the guy that's really winning it. And then if the rounds get closer, you kind of give a charity round here. But I'm with you. I thought it was 120-108. I thought Berlanga may have fought a little bit better on the back end of the fight. But, I mean, that's the question I had in my article for snack.com today. Is this a moral victory, or did he just really clear a low bar for Berlanga? I mean, I talked to some professional gamblers, guys that make money at this. Nobody I knew was picking Berlanga, even at the 18 or 20 to 1 odds, which I thought was really telling that the guy that supposedly had the puncher's chance, they weren't giving much of a chance even with that punch. And I never thought for one second that he punched off his front foot with a lot of conviction to actually make that come to fruition. So I'm with you. I had it a shutout, and I actually think the judging seemed to be very, very charitable for Berlanga.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about the odds. It opened, I mean, there were lines earlier in the week, or 25-1, he was a major favorite. It closed near 15-1. I mean, the money was pouring in on the underdog for whatever reason. But, I mean, you could see right off the jump. Now, normally we're waiting for Canelo to warm up to a fight, knowing he can take a punch, two, three rounds, whatever it may be. I mean, he looked dominant from the start. He gets the early knockdown. I didn't think it was going to go. I thought he was going to score a knockdown because of – but credit to Berlanga, if there is one thing, he hung in there and took somewhat of a punishment. I mean, it wasn't overpowering, but he did connect. And when he did, he still showed those signs.
Yeah, you know, this kind of reminds me of a fight that took place, I mean, I can't believe it now, almost 30 years ago, right on the same weekend is when Julio Cesar Chavez chased around and battered Hector Camacho in another Puerto Rican-Mexican rivalry, which was taken much more seriously by the public. And I still remember after that fight where Chavez won just about every second of every round of that fight, that there was plaudits given to the Macho Man for actually taking his beating, like, and the term that was used was like a man. You know, the only difference is Camacho really didn't have the power or was not known as a puncher, and everyone kind of knew that after the Edwin Rosario fight where he got shook up in 86, he was never the same guy. I've never seen a fighter basically change his ring identity that severely after taking two or three hard shots quite the way he did. With Berlanga, he still, and what they sold us was that, hey, he has a reputation of being a heavy-handed big puncher, but that means actually punching with conviction and meaning. And I thought he may have done that when he knew he was close to the finish line, but he did not do it nearly enough to the point where I thought he was ever really giving himself a shot to win the fight.
Steve Kim's on Cofin & Company. Spot is presented by Snack Nutrition. So I see a lot of chatter about Canelo and matchmaking coming up. And I saw an interesting tweet that you retweeted about, you know, some older guys of the past, they paid it forward. They gave young guys a chance to make money and go for a big fight. Hell, Canelo got that opportunity from Mayweather. What's going to happen here with Canelo next couple fights?
You know, I really don't know. I was actually surprised that he had said that if B-Ball should beat Beterbiev, that he would like to do that rematch. Seeing is believing. I was actually ringside for that fight, which took place about, 2 years ago. And I don't care what the judge's official scorecard said. I thought that was a 10-2 fight. And it's been shown that at a certain level, at this age, 66 fights in, 34 years of age, Canelo is no longer really going to be able to overpower these guys at light heavyweight. And that one knockout against the faded Sergey Kovalev, and it's been about six fights now since he scored a stoppage. I don't see him outboxing a B-ball, or at least the B-ball that I saw a couple of years ago. And I do wonder, does he now look and say, okay, if Turki Alışık and the Saudi Arabian cartel organization pays me a certain amount, do I then take on Terrence Crawford? And so I don't know exactly what he does. I think some of those time-honored traditions that were a part of the sport of boxing, unfortunately, Steve, in my view, no longer exist.
Once again, talking to Steve Kim, Three Knockdown Rules. Steve, that being said, he did make the comment in the ring that, hey, they say I don't fight young. Berlanga was young. He was undefeated, or he is young. He was undefeated. I also hear the clamoring of when's he going to fight, and they start naming the big names. A lot of people don't realize or they don't think about it when they say it and utter the words, is that there are some weight classes that are separating the big match that they're the big matches that they're talking about. You know, the one that we were talking about ringside was Canelo Crawford. Crawford's actually older. What is that, two weight classes? I mean, can we get a super fight with one of the bigger names, maybe, you know, that they meet in the middle?
Yeah, I mean, look, let's be honest. When they say younger guy, that they mean David Benavidez. Look, there's a reason why they chose Berlanga. He was a heavy underdog, very, very inexperienced in relative comparison to Canelo, and they may have thought he was a bit of a front runner. Maybe they could score a stoppage. But, I mean, David Benavidez is the younger guy. That's what they really – that's the subtext of that whole conversation there. And you're right. As much as I like Crawford, and Crawford is certainly a surefire, unanimous first ballot Hall of Famer, no worse than the second or third fighter in the world pound for pound, weight matters. I mean, think about this, guys. I read where Berlanga came in at 193 pounds on fight night this past weekend. 193. That means he's 8 pounds away from officially being a heavyweight. And he was never able to really hurt or come close to rocking Canelo back on his heels. Maybe that's because he didn't throw a lot of punches. I just wondered, can a guy that just literally a year ago was 147 pounds, what chance does he have of chipping away at Canelo? Now, with that being said, because of Crawford's pedigree and his competitive spirit, which I think is as good as anyone in the game, there is some curiosity for that fight, given his resume that does not exist with Berlanga. But you are right, though, Willie. Size matters.
Steve came with us. Let's turn our attention to the NFL. Bears didn't play well last night, especially Caleb Williams. He was off. His timing was off. I'm seeing a lot of, and I understand this is the way it is now with talking head TV, sports radio, and jabrons on social media. People want to give up on Caleb Williams. Oh, Justin Fields, they should have kept him. Let's pump the brakes a little bit.
Well, you said he was off. I think Caleb was awful. He was bad. And a lot of the concerns that people had that really know football from a technical level, everything that they had doubts about came to fruition last night. He does not play on structure. He does not play on time. He needlessly tries to extend plays, and I personally don't know if you can coach that out of him. He is so ingrained in a certain system. I get it. It's only a second game, but I don't think it was just an off game. I mean, when I look at C.J. Stroud consistently throw that ball on time with when his back foot hits the top of the drop and he conducts surgery, I say, wow, there's not enough of those guys. And to me, Caleb Williams is emblematic of the mediocre, watered-down quarterback play that Coach Jason Brown has been talking about for 3 years. Look at some of these passing numbers and the performances of these highly drafted quarterbacks who, quite frankly, have been bad. Bad.
Bryce Young loses his job too early?
Let's put it this way. If Bryce Young was an appliance that you bought at the shopping center, you would look for that receipt and hopefully you could return it or get an exchange.
Yikes.
He's just too small. He looks like a midget out there, and I don't think he has the athleticism of a Kyler Murray to overcome it. I mean, guys, I know that statistics and numbers can lie. He had 26 pass attempts yesterday for, I think, 86 yards. I didn't think that was possible. That has to be some sort of record. And look, this is not all his fault. Number one, he didn't draft himself. Number two, that's a bad franchise from the top down. And that's becoming a bit of a poison well. But as you look back at that particular draft, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud has become the modern-day version of Ryan Leaf, Peyton Manning.
Okay. Wouldn't have made that connection, but I mean, you can right now. It's early, but he does look Ryan Leaf-like, except that Ryan Leaf's a jackass, and he still is, but Bryce Young seems like a nice kid. Let's close on some college football. Steve Kim is with us. You always give us a scoop on the ACC. This is kind of a big game, and it's not necessarily an ACC game, but Miami and South Florida, which all of a sudden, is this really for supremacy in the state of Florida, and could there be 70,000 at a college game?
Well, that's just what the U brings out. I mean, come on. And by the way, is it for Florida supremacy? Guys, have you seen Florida State in Florida? Yes. Yes. Those other teams are bad. Yeah. But this is one of the bigger games, probably the biggest game the Bulls have had since they hosted Dalvin Cook's Florida State Seminoles about 7-8 years ago. Look, they're a tricky team with the type of tempo and pace they play offensively. They hung in there. It was a one-possession game in Tuscaloosa against a monster Alabama team. So out of the four games Miami will have played by Saturday, USF will present the most challenge. Doesn't mean it's going to be a close game. I know the spread's about 17.5. I think Miami's for real. I thought this is probably their best roster in over 20 years. And as long as they keep Cam Ward upright and healthy, they should be in the playoff mix. But there is some difficulty going into that game. It's going to be a very charged, electric, primetime atmosphere at Raymond James Stadium.
Steve, have a good week.
Guys, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
There you go. Steve Kim, 3 Knockdown Rule with Mario Lopez. It's presented each week by Snack Nutrition. Willie Cofield, we're getting ready for the shortly after 5 o'clock kickoff for Monday Night Football. Ton of injuries to get to. Big news in Carolina where Bryce Young is going to be sitting for now. I think the Caleb Williams stuff is stupid. It's two games in.
And I think he's
playing a decent team last night. Yeah. The bar cannot be C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud is arguably a guy who had one of the greatest rookie quarterback seasons ever. That's not the bar. But Caleb Williams has to work on it. His timing was way off. His accuracy was not good. He seemed rattled by the rush. He needs work.
It'll come around, and I think he's going to be fine. I don't think, like you said, it's fair. The bar should not be set that high. It should be set to rookie standard.